Welcome back to The Edit. This is Esquire's weekly look at everything that crosses our inbox. Welcome back, guys. I'm Matthew Baxter-Priest, and I am here with Esquire's Nasri.
Hello.
How's it going, man?
Not too bad. You?
Yeah, good. You were away last week.
I was.
What parts of the world and what things were you delving into there?
Where was I? I'm not even sure what I was doing last week. Why was I not here?
I mean, you're a very busy man, if I'm honest. So I'm surprised to I'm surprised if you're not in a meeting or like driving a fast car or hobnobbing around the world these days.
I did pop over to Doha, to meet a very famous footballer. I have a friend who was very jealous that I went. It was to meet David Beckham.
Ah, I hear there's many famous footballers going to
Doha. Yes, yeah. They're going a bit football crazy. Everyone's going a bit football crazy around me, which I have to get used to as like the resident like non-football fanatic. But I always get into it this time of year.
Yeah, there's a hell of a month for it coming up. Mm. Yeah, we'll actually be doing quite a lot of football content on esquireme.com, as well as our next issue, our November issue in Saudi, Qatar, and Middle East will be heavily football focused as well. So I'm sure you'll love that. By the end of it, you're going to be like this encyclopedia of football, so it'll be fine.
No, I do enjoy it because like the World Cup is this like different thing. Mm. Like it's, of course it's football, but it's also culture and you know music and celebration. It's just all these things together. So football's part of it, but it's also just like, and it's like actually very exciting that the world, like I'm for the first time in a long time, I'm in a part of the world where the whole world is coming here for this event.
Sure.
And even though it's happening next door in Qatar, like I think Dubai, where we live, is also going to be like really energized, you know, people coming through here to go to the World Cup, you know, maybe popping by here on the way out, you know, so it does feel like there's going to be a lot of activity here in the next month.
Yeah, and you know what, it's like a bittersweet moment. I was talking to a couple of guys that I play football with the other day, and there is this beautiful sense of coming together, as you said, when it comes to something like the World Cup, and you know, where a lot of like say non-football fans, but they will really get into it over a month.
Yeah,
you know, they'll know all the games, they'll know all the teams. All of a sudden, everyone on like the team that they support, they turn into first name terms.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, like John or like a Muhammad, and it's like, you know, it's like, but it's funny because there's some people who like if you're a football obsessive, it really pisses other people off when all of a sudden you get all these like people.
The casuals.
Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like who are mortified that England lost one game that they only watch every 4 years. But I'd quite enjoy the difference between the two. But it should be fun. It's going to be a wonderful kind of festive and a festive and celebratory month across the region, especially in Qatar. But I also, I think Dubai have some pretty big plans to, I don't want to say hijack. That seems
extreme.
A bit,
yeah.
It seems a bit menacing. But
participate.
Hijack.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's jump into our first section, which is as you know, called News, Views, and Shoes. Great. So as we know, News, Views, and Shoes, basically the news that comes in and out of our inboxes over the week, things that really stand out, worth talking about.
Mm-hmm.
What's come across your inbox this week?
Like I was telling you before we came in here, I was like, I feel like I don't know what's happened in the world in the past week. There's weeks like that where I just feel like, I haven't paid attention to the world this week, which in a way is a blessing. But I mean, the main thing that's popping.
Does this come in with you, like moving house and everything?
I know, yeah. I am still a bit like, this. Every time I'm on this podcast, I kind of mention like, I've just moved here. This is what I've done. I've now bought a bed. Like I'm like giving people updates on my move. So yeah, I'm obviously like in this weird situation where I still don't have a TV. I don't have like, I have like no sofa. Like I have one chair and a bed. Like that's my current setup. Very minimal.
I imagine the neighbors are like,
I was going to say,
who's the guy moving?
Yeah, who's the weirdo? Like kids, no one talked to the guy in house 8.
Yeah. The one rocking chair in an empty room.
But the thing yesterday, I was, you know, there was the Benzema obviously won the Ballon d'Or.
Sure.
And so obviously I know who Benzema is. He was our April cover star. So that's always good to mention. But he's also one of these figures who's more like, he's a footballer obviously, but he's also like a pop culture figure.
Sure.
Especially because like I'm French speaking, so I watch some French TV from time to time. And he's not like controversial, but like I saw this, he released this video because he's in Miami a lot or something.
Yeah.
And he released this like very like produced, overproduced video about his holiday in Miami. and people were judging him in France, like about, you know, what's this like hip hop lifestyle he's got, and it's disgusting. And, you know, sure. It was very condescending, I would say, the coverage of it. But what was interesting at the Ballon d'Or is like, and we did a little post on this, is how he was like channeling Tupac. And I just saw a friend.
What do you mean by channeling Tupac?
So I saw some people might follow on Instagram, this guy called Sheb Moha, and like he had shared like a photo of Benzema next to Tupac, and they were dressed identical. And I was like, that's weird. What's that about? So I started looking into it. So I started looking into it and I realized he was dressed basically like the way he had his tux. And not even sure what you'd call it, like a tie, like the...
Yeah, the kind of, almost like a bolo tie or collar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the glasses. Mm. So the glasses apparently are a collaboration he's done with Jean-Paul Gaultier, which is directly inspired by 90s hip-hop and Tupac specifically.
Sensational.
So it's not like a mistake. Like, he is intentionally channeling Tupac.
So this is Karim Benzema showing up to French international footballer and... you know, Real Madrid striker, Champions League winner, La Liga winner, and now finally wins the Ballon d'Or, awarded to the best footballer in the world by France Football Magazine, I think. He was a pretty strong lock going in that he was going to win.
Yeah.
I mean, I think something like 13 of the previous years have been won by either Cristiano Ronaldo or Lionel Messi.
Yeah.
But Benzema had one of those seasons where it was just, he was... on a different level, God mode, they call it, I believe, in the parlance. So he basically knew he was going to win. So he fully plan, this is the look, this is the statement that I want to make. And I love the fact that it was true to him and his, you know, his tastes and his talents and his inspiration.
Yeah, and there's always this like relationship between sports and hip hop. Whether it's in like the NBA or, you know, increasingly in places like football, because there's often people who end up in sports come from, you know, certain types of immigrant backgrounds or second generation, third generation immigrants. And the same kind of happens with hip hop. So there's these like parallel worlds. And that's why I was saying, like, when on French TV, like people were judging him for his hip hop lifestyle, quote unquote. There was a bit of like racism in that statement, I felt, because I'm like, yeah, the guy's doing well and this is how he chooses to flaunt it. And sure, whatever. Like, he's not harming anyone. Sure. Like, he's making this by playing football. He's not like a drug dealer. Like, so I thought it was cool actually to see him. And this nod also, like, this connection between, French, obviously he's a French footballer. He plays in Spain, but then he's like adopting this like very North American aesthetic and cultural aesthetic and stuff. So I think it's just really interesting from like a cultural perspective.
Sure. Speaking of cultural perspectives, bit of news that popped up yesterday, which was significant for the UAE. So there's a news that the Louvre in Abu Dhabi are bringing over Da Vinci's St. John the Baptist, which is one of his kind of most celebrated and popular works. Obviously, everyone knows Da Vinci for all the inventions and most importantly, the Mona Lisa. Or not most importantly, but most famously, Mona Lisa. So that will be coming to display at the Louvre in Abu Dhabi on November, I believe it's November 8th, my notes have got here, available for people to go and see and kind of revel in. I believe it's traveling, so it's on its way, making a stop here. To coincide, what a coincidence, with the 5th anniversary of the opening of the Louvre in Abu Dhabi. So obviously that was a huge project, a huge landmark opening, and a huge cultural significance to the UAE once that partnership was established with the Louvre in Paris. And if you've ever been, or any of our listeners have ever been, you can kind of, there's a real sense of weight and serenity, I think, when you go there. So it's if that's your jam, it's something that you shouldn't really be missing coming in November.
Yeah, I shamefully haven't been yet to the. To be fair, like I've only just moved here, as I keep saying, but also like I don't know. I just kept meaning to go, and it just never happened. And now I feel you know when like you forget someone's name and then you, at some point you're like, it's been too long, like I can't ask them their name now. So I just feel like, oh, this is fake that I've been there. Now I need to actually go there.
The funny thing is, so I was in the Louvre in Paris in April earlier this year. There was a big gala dinner that was happening with Vacheron Constantin, the Swiss watchmaker. And I mean, you know, luckily in the situations that you and I are in, we get to experience some truly kind of once-in-a-lifetime wonderful things. And on that day, Vacheron booked out the entirety of the Louvre on a Tuesday morning.
As you do.
So it was, there must have been about 70 people, including myself, just wandering through on a private tour of an empty Louvre. It's unheard of. And when there, obviously that includes the Mona Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
Walking into the Mona Lisa room, if you've been to the Louvre, is you know, it's generally packed full of people. Mm-hmm. Cameras, queues, selfies, everything. And this day there was no one. So you can get right up close, as close as possible, you know, respectfully. And then the following day, I don't know if you heard this story about someone had gone in and it might have been a climate activist or something, right, and had thrown cake at Mona Lisa.
Right. Is that you?
Well, yeah, exactly. So the next day I got my social was all blowing up with people going, wait, you were in the Louvre yesterday. There's cake. And here's a picture of you on Instagram smiling.
I'm very confused by this protest technique. I don't want to sound like an old man who's like, what are the kids doing?
Sure.
But there is this element of, like, they just did it in London again. They threw tomato soup at Van Gogh, the sunflowers.
Yeah, I read that.
And I'm like, sure, you know, I understand like protest isn't always like pretty, but it's just, I'm not sure who this is for. Like, I keep wondering, like, you see that and you go, oh, right, yeah, we should care about the climate. Like, I don't know, I just don't understand the connection.
Sure. I can only assume it's that we're now here in a podcast studio in Dubai
talking about it. Yeah.
But at the same time, throwing back to St. John the Baptist coming to Abu Dhabi, don't protest.
Yeah,
man.
Please.
Guys, anyone listening, just come on, just appreciate the art. There's ways to make statements, and ruining kind of classic, iconic moments of human history is not one of them. Although I can assume on the flip side they would be saying, salt the environment out, otherwise we won't have any human future.
Yeah,
that's an argument.
Agreed.
But one that I am not willing to have today. Any other news, views, and shoes coming your side, my friend?
Nothing on my end.
Cool. Awesome. Let's wrap that up and move swiftly on to part two. Cool. Well, welcome back. I mean, I assume for you guys it probably felt like about 2 seconds with a little thrown in. We've been out. We've had lunch and we'll come back. But we're ready to jump into the more meatier part of the section, where we like to take one larger subject that's relevant and kind of unpick it a little bit. And this week, what we've been dealing with in the office is the idea of the rise of no and low alcoholic drinks in the region and generally in the world, and how more and more people are turning to non-alcoholic, zero alcohol and non-alcoholic drinks. And the sector, the industry, is actually, you know, rocketing into a multi-billion dollar global industry. Is it changing the way we behave, or is the way we behave changing the industry? And that's the question I'm going to ask you, Naz. And I ask you specifically because you've looked into this over the past few months as we've been developing our content around it.
Yeah, it's funny because it's sometimes I have the same, I used to have the same attitude with no alcohol drinks that I do with like decaf coffee,
sure,
which is why, you know, surely the point of coffee is to be caffeinated,
sure,
and surely the point of alcohol, you know, an alcoholic seeming drink is for there to be alcohol in it. But I will say that, you know, obviously we have an article in this on the website and in the October issue, which you should check out. But there is something like to be said about the pandemic and like the fact that we were all so conscious of our health. It was something at the beginning of the pandemic. Maybe people have blocked this out of their mind, but when I was still in London, the toilet paper ran out. People were fighting each other over toilet paper.
That was big news. Yeah,
it was super weird. And I remember finding one article that explained why, and it was someone who'd written a book called The Psychology of Pandemics, and he said basically in a pandemic, you lose kind of control over your your ability to be healthy and clean, and you know, you just feel that, so you start to stock things that make you feel clean. So that's so that was the insight there. And I think that the same happened with our health. So like people became very conscious of their mental health, of what they were eating, what they were drinking. People made some changes because, like, you know, if especially in the beginning stages when it was like absolutely terrifying, I think people got into some habits, you know, exercising, doing whatever, you know, running outside, any kind of thing you could do. And some of those things stuck. And I think this is one of those things that stuck. It's like no alcohol trend. And honestly, like these drinks are great. So I went to an event the other day where they were serving, I think it was Liar, mm-hmm. one of these brands that makes this.
Yeah, I've heard this is one of the kind of big success stories of making zero alcohol versions of like gin and tonics. And
yeah, things. I had like a Negroni type of thing. I don't know what it's called officially
in the NOLO vernacular.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I was like, yeah, this is great. I'm at an event. I'm going to drive later. Hmm. But I do want to feel like I'm at a party as well. Cool. So it just kind of filled that gap for me in that moment. Hmm. And apparently, you know, there's interesting things in the article about, for example, how, you know, being around less alcohol is even healthier for like bar staff and like different kind of things we don't always think because we think about it as like what you're consuming, but also
from a consumer based level.
Yeah, sure. But also, you know, just people who are around the industry, it's also kind of makes it a healthier industry to be in general, which is an interesting perspective.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the piece when it went into that way. It gives you that other viewpoint into it. What I also found interesting, and I thought that the feature was handled very kind of eloquently on, was the idea of alcohol is such a social lubricant. And that idea of people feeling, whether subconsciously or unconsciously, that you know, pressured into it, peer pressure, the idea that if everyone's out there, then you feel like you're on the edge and a little bit excluded from it. And it's just a way to help that, move that on, and have kind of more control over your decision making. Which obviously, you know, too much alcohol will, you know, help. Well, generally tends to loosen their ability in decision making. So it's it was a very interesting and concurrent point that a lot of the people who we interviewed and a lot of the investigations that we went into it all brought up. So if you're thinking it, you know, the chances are that someone else is thinking it as well.
Yeah, and the other interesting thing was like, it's not all or nothing. You know, some people can decide to do just this. Some people can decide to mix it up. You know, like maybe once a week you're having alcohol and the rest of the time you're having no alcohol alternatives. So it just gives you more flexibility in your, you know, I had like a non-alcoholic beer the other day because all I wanted was the kind of refreshing taste of a beer. But, you know, there was only a non-alcoholic version. And I was like, yeah, this did exactly the same thing for me. This is exactly what I wanted on a hot day. I just wanted to crack open a beer and have a, So I think it gives people like that flexibility.
Yeah, look, in terms of this, I mean, I have a stat in front of me where it's saying the non-alcoholic beer market specifically is expected to surpass $29 billion globally.
Wow.
So you're not alone. Yeah. It is a massively, massively growing market. Potentially, you know, from what we're seeing is it's pandemic fueled as well for various psychological reasons. Social pressures, mental health, we covered. Weight loss. Is an element there. So there's plenty of kind of reasons for it. And I think, you know, the reason against it is, you know, the cultural. I think it has become, you know, it's habitual in most cultures and around the world. As I said, as a social lubricant, as a way to relax and chill out. But the interesting thing about it is a lot of what, especially in our region, is the religious elements to it, which are fantastic in a way that it's allowing that kind of bigger cultural inclusion, which is fundamentally what things like the UAE are built on.
Yeah, 100%. And it's also, you know, one of the, I think it's Jimmy Barrett who's runs this place called Ergo, a bar here in Dubai, and he was saying basically, it's about the flavor. Like at the end of the day, like a cocktail, for example, is about flavor, not about alcohol content. And so he's like, the challenge with the non-alcoholic is getting the flavors right, because sometimes it's not the same sugar content, etc. So you have to like just find ways to mix it in a way that makes them good cocktails. But then, so for someone who doesn't drink alcohol, whether it's for health reasons or religious reasons, they can enjoy the flavor of a cocktail as you would like a fruit cocktail or whatever else. And so, yeah, like you said, just creates that inclusion where people are in the same space, maybe doing different things, but in the same space.
My question is always, the if you're creating flavors to replicate you know, the known tastes of certain famous drinks, what is the, you know, what are those flavors being created out of? Is it more sugars? Is it more syrups? Is it more synthetic flavors and things like that? That's where kind of my, that's the next kind of step that I want to look into after going through this this article and this study. And I think with a lot of people, I think the same was with, my mind went the same way with vaping. You know, with the, you know, people turning to vaping over of traditional cigarettes and e-cigarettes and things. It's the study, has there been enough study, has enough, is there enough raw data to see the overall impact and implications? Again, chances are people are looking into it now. When it is easily digestible and there is more hard data to it, you know, it's 100% something that Esquire will continue to look into.
For sure.
Cool, man.
Cool.
The so after this, it's a cheeky non-alcoholic gin and tonic by your desk.
There you go.
This is,
I can get away with that.
That was a jest. Cut that. No, I'm just saying, thanks, dude. So our final section of the show is one of my favorites. I said one of those three to go from, to be fair, but it is certainly one of them. It's called Strong Opinions, Loosely Held. So regular listeners will know that I tend to be quite opinionated. However, I'm always open for my opinions to be changed if the argument is based on good logic, understanding, or just a really convincing arguer. So this week, Nasri changed my mind on a pet peeve of mine, which is, it might be a bit media focused, this might be a bit inside baseball, but it's the idea of on social media, like intense crediting at the bottom of posts, where it's, we do it a lot in our industry, but it's a lot of, you know, or this person wore this clothes. It was shot by this person. This person powdered their nose. This person held the lights. I get it. I'm all into credit where credit's due. I just sometimes feel that there's, I feel that the people creating the content is clouding the content that's being created and the message is being pushed. That's my personal take. Am I wrong? Convince me otherwise.
I'm a big creditor, so I like crediting. But also, I don't know, I think it's... So I, before joining Esquire, I had a production company. And sure. So, for example, like when we... Crediting is obviously huge in film and TV as well.
Sometimes it's half the length of the film.
Yeah, literally there are credits in the thing itself. But also the same, like if you would share like, oh, we've just released this film or this TV show, you would credit, but like imagine 15 times the credits we're doing now. Mm-hmm. So sometimes like Instagram would tell you like you've run out of space to credit. You can't tag more people.
Fine,
you can't.
Okay, sure.
I think it just gives people like a sense of ownership. They feel... like even if they had like a little part to play in this big thing, like that, you know, the fact they've been tagged by the people who were in charge of it, that just makes them feel like valued. I don't think it should be on every single post. So I think, you know, you do an announcement where you say, this is everyone who worked on it. Then you just share the product, the thing itself. One pet peeve, like kind of related, which is more the LinkedIn post.
Okay, tell me.
Yeah. So the kind of, overly, like the Oscar speech LinkedIn post, which we've all been guilty of. I've done it. You know, I'd like to thank my parents and God and my manager and, you know, all that stuff.
I believe what's the famous phrase? I'd like to thank God and my sponsors.
Yeah, but there's also, I saw a meme which was, you know, normal, you know, we used to say, you know, I got my driver's license. And now on LinkedIn, you say, I'd like to thank the Ministry of Transportation for their faith in my abilities. And, you know, so there is that, I think, which is a bit much sometimes when, you know, I don't know, you just got some certification for doing 2-hour course.
It's almost like performative, it's a performative post or performative thanks or.
Yeah.
It's a hard. Both of these things are relevant in a way that, like, I don't want to sound too grinchy because I understand, like, I appreciate everyone who puts in any bit of work for Esquire. And this goes way beyond Esquire with anything, you know, the work of people behind the scenes, in front of camera, anything in terms of any kind of media or building a hospital. But there's an idea of, I find a lot of it very kind of self-indulgent in a way, and also an area of, should the reward be like, I helped build Burj Khalifa. I don't need my name in Burj Khalifa. I just need to know that I helped doing that project, which was, I mean, I didn't, for the record.
But, yeah, I was going to say it. Exactly.
But so I wonder sometimes if it's like people are now, it's the overkill of personal promotion. And these days it's about shouting about how loud and how good you are, or rather than, you know, the demonstration of it happening. Warren Buffett is an interesting one because he, you know, is very well known as for his wealth and the way he uses it and spends it. But he's not an Elon Musk who will tell you every day, you know, every decision that he has. So it's, I don't know if it's a fair parable, but I wonder if that's the problem that I'm having with it.
I think, I mean, there is definitely, I mean, it's exhausting to keep promoting yourself. So, but it's like this vicious cycle where in some industries, like if you want to keep getting work as a photographer, photographer's assistant, like if you're tagged in an Esquire post, that might help you get a job. But then it's also exhausting to keep tracking that and sharing it and resharing. It's a full-time, you know, we didn't, I mean, 10 years ago, you didn't need to promote yourself every day to get work. Like you had, the systems were different and a bit maybe less kind of Hunger Games, like a 24/7 Hunger Games. So yeah, it's how it's done, so we do it. And I don't know if there's a interesting alternative yet, but I mean, I don't hate it. I don't think, you know, I think it's just like a nice little, it's like a thank you note is how I look at it.
Yeah, I agree. Look, I don't hate it. It is a pet peeve. I'll probably downgrade it to pet peeve. However, there is an element of when it starts to get in the way of the work that's being produced.
Yeah.
And deemed more important. Or not necessarily deemed more important, but the outcome of something, as you said, building a hospital will do more for a community than the guy who got the contract to build the hospital. I'm very happy that the guy got that contract and he built a lovely hospital, but it's about the patient care and it's about the support that it can give on a wider context. A bit of balance, and it never harms to give anyone anything, so I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, it's also a philosophy. Like here in Dubai, you'll see a lot of like developer names on buildings, which I used to be very confused about. The first times I came to Dubai, I'm like, why are there so many ads like on these buildings? Then I realized, oh, look, developers put their names on every building in town. And that's one way to do it, you know. And I guess in a place like Dubai, you're trying to make a name for yourself. It's you know, the whole country is 50 years old in its current form. So you have to compete really quickly with everyone. So maybe, you know, in highly competitive, I guess the more established you are, the less you need to say who you are and what you're doing.
The building thing is actually really an amusing story. It was in earlier this year, in maybe April or something, maybe even March or so. Giorgio Armani came to Dubai to do a fashion show. And they did it at the base of the Burj Khalifa near the Armani Hotel. And then after the event, it was a spectacular event, lovely stuff, beautiful clothes. And then after the event, they had a private gig with Chris Martin from Coldplay. Not all of Coldplay, Chris Martin and a select band. And he was on stage, there must have been about, I don't know, 200-300 of us there, kind of crowded close. And I remember, and he was in the backdrop with Downtown Dubai all behind him. And he just said, well, this next song is dedicated to Mr. Imar. And he goes, I'm not entirely sure who he is, but he seems to be doing really well for himself. He goes, because I'm counting 14 buildings with his name on. And then he said, I'm pretty famous. And he goes, I don't have one building with my name on it. And it was a great joke. I'm pretty certain Chris Martin knows who the Alibar and the Amar family and the Amar brand is. But it was a good joke at the time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, Trump famously puts his name on a lot of buildings, golf courses, etc.
And look what that, and what became of that guy?
There you go.
Yeah.
No one's ever heard of him. What's he up to?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, fine. I think let's
convinced, loosely held.
I can be partially swayed. Let's not. I don't want it to go to Trump levels.
There you go.
But also a little bit of humility and a little bit of thanking the little guy probably goes further than I realize.
Done. Agreed.
Nice. Well, listen, we're going to get out of here. So do you want to get your plugs in before we go? Where can people find you on social media and what are you up to?
I'm at Nasri Atala on Twitter and I think on Instagram. I'm not sure what my Instagram handle is. What I'm up to, well, at the moment, we're putting together our November issue for Middle East, our Qatar issue, like you were mentioning, for the World Cup, and our Saudi issue. We've got very exciting people we're talking to, very exciting covers. Like, we're very proud of what's coming out in the next month. So keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, cool. Well, if you need me, you can find me at Mr. Peaker, MrPeaker, on all social medias. And if you want more info and of the things that we've been talking about, you can check out esquireme.com or follow us on our social media for Esquire Middle East or Esquire ME. Thanks for checking in. We will be back here same time next week. Cheers, Nasri. Appreciate it, man.
See you.
Yeah, have a good week. Laters.